Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, the creator of the Brown Briefly, which still carries his name in his honor. Although Brian left us over 2 years ago, we try to preserve Brian's roundtable format by adhering to his concept that less is more, more or less. Today, with Truman O'Brien and Lynn Kerrigan guiding us from the Voice of Vachon Gene Bosch studio in bustling, bodacious downtown Vachon, as Brian used to say, and Kevin Jones and hopefully Gail Kellner zooming in with us from the Vachon homes, and me, I'm Bruce Holman. Let me introduce and hear what's going on in the world of each of the Brieflies. Our master of the virtual mix and Zoom modulating sound engineer, treetop skimming pilot, Vachon Reacher out of West, rancher out of West Texas and Montana, Truman O'Brien, what's happening in your world?
Good morning, Bruce. And, you know, Kevin, looks like you're in your car.
I'm zooming in from a Vachon parking lot today.
Oh, well, cool.
That's, yeah, that's awesome.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Have internet, will travel.
I'm impressed. Oh. Yeah. So what's going on with me? I guess you guys heard about the podcast that's going on this Friday. Amanda Knox and her husband, Christopher, are doing a podcast from the VCA on Friday at 7:30 tonight. And my partner, Craig, and I have been working towards that. We're going to be on their show, and it should be interesting. So we're thinking about that. And my little back issue is actually getting a little better. I'm sitting comfortably today, and who knows? I finally got a referral to the spine clinic. They're going to be able to take a look at me and see if I'm fixable or not. So we'll see. So anyway, things are looking up. I'm pleased.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, that should be a very exciting event on Friday evening. And Truman, again, that 7 o'clock Friday evening at the Vachon Center for the Arts.
7:30.
Yeah. At the Vachon Center for the Arts.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Thanks for that. So out of the land of magnolias and onto the island of madrones comes the analytic academic social worker, poet, backup singer, and former all-star shortstop for the Dixie Debutantes, Lynn Kerrigan. Lynn, are you only a backup singer, or you sometimes do the leads?
Have you heard my voice? That's
every week.
Well,
actually,
it's a little bit gritty.
She has a lovely singing voice, so don't let her kid you.
I sound to me like Janis Joplin, which is a high compliment, but, you know, it's a specialty edition of singing. So if you like that kind of singing, yes, I have been known to belt one or two out, but mostly people grimace, and so I sing low and beneath lyrical singers.
Acquired taste, right?
It is. But I have to say, now, I've got a couple of things I want to mention for this week, and I've desperately tried to find my resource for one of them. So I couldn't, and we'll just have to say that the Watchkos, who used to be one of our veterinarians on Vachon Island, have a daughter that made national news this, if not today, then yesterday, because I can't find the paper. But she has developed a podcast called Locked Up in Shanghai. She is a navigator, deputy assistant or something like that, on the boat that has been hijacked by Shanghai. They won't let them harbor. They won't let them off. They won't let them leave. And so she's developed some big podcast about this whole incident that is going around the world now and now making national news.
And it's excellent, by the way. I've seen a video that she put together from being stuck on the ship there in Shanghai, and it is it is excellent. She's just done a really good job. She's quite an entertainer as well, a singer and songwriter, plays a guitar.
Can you remember her name? Because I didn't know
it's
her.
It's Madeline, I believe.
Madeline.
Mm-hmm. Madeline. Madeline Walsko.
I just wanted to give a shout out for our famous Vashoner for a while. My daughter knew her, I think, because she was off traveling the world in a sailboat with her parents. I think she's around my daughter's age, which is 40. But I think, we have a lot of pretty famous, accomplished Vashonites. This is a nice little incubator here on this island. And we wish her well and hope that they get her out of there soon. And the other thing I wanted to mention was, I have to tell you, the highlight of my week, this is sad, but it was watching the Queen's Jubilee, which I enjoyed thoroughly, especially when Queen, the band, got up to play for her. And Adam Lambert, who is, came in second, I think, on one of the American Idol shows, but was by far the best singer and is kind of the leader of the glam rock people now, got up and sang for her all that, "We are the champions of the world and we will rock you," and all of that. And I was just belting it out, Bruce, right along with them. That just thrilled me. Sadly to say, I watched all the royals and all of their doings.
Did you see the thing that they put together with Paddington Bear?
No, but I heard about it.
Oh, it is the cutest darn thing ever. Great. Oh, it's just fabulous. And the Queen is so cool. The Paddington offers her a marmalade sandwich that he has in his hat. And she says, "Oh, no, I have one." And she reaches one, pulls one out of her purse. It's just too cute. And the cool part of that, I guess, is that she did not tell her kids that she was going to do it, and so it was hilarious. A surprise. Yeah, the grandkids, of course, loved it. So anyway,
well, it just made me think. We talk so much about politics, and I think there's something comforting about a woman that's been queen since 1952, and the consistency of that. I admire her reserve, and I admire her capacity to take in so much without, she shows so little except love and regard for her country and all of her dominions. So good on you, Princess Elizabeth, Queen Elizabeth.
All right, I got one more for you, and that is that our show today was this morning, the morning scramble, was based on the sun, because obviously we have a little sun today, yay! But also because it was the date of the coronation of King Louis XIV, who is currently holds the record as the longest reigning monarch in the world. It's 72 years, 100 and some odd days. And Queen Elizabeth, in about 4 days or 5 days, will be the second longest reigning.
Oh, she's going to want to beat him. That's why she's hanging on.
Well, she can't. I don't think she's going to make another 2 years, but she'll definitely come in second. She's third, and in about 5 days, she'll be second.
So. Come on, if I were her, I'd hold out with every last atom of my body. Yeah.
She's doing pretty well for 96.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wouldn't be surprised to see her break 100.
Exactly.
More power to her.
Exactly. So reflecting on his years as a rocket scientist from his perch, used to be on top of Vashon Island, now it's in a parking lot. And we won't ask where, Kevin.
My secret.
Yeah, your secret. So, and the phantom editor of the Indivisible Vashon Weekly online newsletter for your consideration, Kevin Jones. Kevin, what's going on with Indivisible Vashon, with the struggle for progressive values and all those other vital things that are happening on our island?
First, let me just say I'm in the shade of a beautiful pink lavender rhododendron in full bloom, and the bees are buzzing and thoroughly enjoying the fact that it is spring and a sunny day. Truman, as you mentioned. Truman, your situation with your back, I always hearken back to the Backbone Campaign when I hear any discussion like that. So shout out to them, and of course, their leader, Bill Moyer, certainly survived an incident with his back and has gone on to fame and fortune. And Lynn, I saw Don Walsko just the other day, and I regret not stopping to ask him how his daughter was doing. So glad to hear the report from you. Let's see, for my actions, and the main thing that I'm focused on right now is supporting a group to address the building emissions and climate pollution from buildings, which is our number two and fastest growing source of climate pollution. So I just had an opportunity to present a briefing to some local Vashon business owners about what's happening. And the State Building Codes Council is soon to be addressing codes which would require new residential construction to go to heat pumps for space and water heating, much as is now in front of the King County Council for unincorporated King County. So there's moves afoot to help improve the climate and actually to improve living in homes, new homes anyway, because those heat pumps for space heating also provide cooling in the summer. And, you know, we see more and more of those days where no longer is it true you can survive in the Northwest without air conditioning.
Thank you. Well,
thanks, Kevin. Yes. Yeah, things are changing, although this spring in the Northwest is sort of counterintuitive. It's been the coldest, wettest spring on record, but that's Kevin.
You know, it reminds me of the springs of my youth, actually. And, you know, I'm not that old. I mean, the queen has been seated longer than I've been on the earth. I recall just days and days and days of drizzly, rainy weather. And of course, the saying that the good weather comes for sure starting on the 5th of July. Mm-hmm. So many 4th of July spent huddled under an umbrella. I think that so many of us who've been around for a while in the Northwest sort of see this as a regular normal spring, as opposed to the abnormal hot weather and sunny weather we've had for the last for several springs in the past.
Gosh, I remember moving here when I was about to go to grad school in 79. Though I was born here, I left for Atlanta when I was 2. And I remember when I moved back here thinking, this is not June. This is no fair. What month is this? And, you know, we famously call it
January,
yes, around here, because it is predictably rainy now, because it seems like that settled out a little bit for a while, for a few years, and now it's hard rain. It's not that soft Irish drizzle. It's hard rain.
Yeah, you know, I've recently spoke with my cousin who's down in Texas, and we still have the old family ranch down in West Texas. And my father, long story, I'll make it short. My father, back in the 50s, they had about a 7-year drought, and my father was forced to sell all the cattle and actually put in a cotton farm by drilling a deep water well, so which is very unusual for at that time for that part of the country. But they're in the midst of about a 4.5 to 5 year one now, and his kids have sold all their cattle, and the son has gone to work in the oil fields just to try and survive. So they're having just the opposite down there.
Right,
yeah. I'd say blessed is the rain, frankly. I do also recall I think it was the current record that we have in Western Washington for continuous days of rainfall.
Yes.
And it was some time ago, because I was driving to work southbound on 405. And I'm trying to remember where I was, probably living in Kirkland at the time. And we were just a few days away from setting the record. And, you know, you're crawling through traffic on southbound 405, which is never fun anyway. And it is raining, and it had been raining and raining and raining. And I looked over to the drivers around me, because we're going at like a walking pace. And the fellow next to me, one of the guys who came up in a car next to me, had this frown of despair and disgust on his face that was so deep, I could only break out in laughter. And maybe it's because I'm a native and I'd like to wear that badge maybe more proudly than I should. But tolerating the weather that we have in the Northwest is just one of the rites of passage of being a Northwest native. And I felt that it was particularly appropriate at that day, watching how frustrated this particular driver was, given the fact that we had all that rain.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to appreciate it, you know. For those poor folks who are not used to it, it does make a difference. I'll tell you, I decided finally that I must be a Northwesterner when I was standing outside my car chatting with a person. This is many years ago. And it suddenly dawned on me that it was raining. And we're standing there just chatting away. And finally I went, what the heck am I doing? I'm standing out here in the rain, you know, just la la la, and that's, well, I must be a converted Northwesterner. So there you go.
There you go.
We have, by the way, we have a delight. I believe we have. Yes, we do. Theo Kellner has just showed up in the studio.
Hello. I was just going to announce that we've got joining us is our futurist, writer, dreamcatcher, recently published author and peripatetic poet, Gail Kellner. Gail, it's good to see you here in the studio rather than ensconced in your family's multi-generational cabin at Sylvan Beach. So you've broken out of there.
Yes.
Hopefully you've gotten your septic system working.
Yes, yes. The last few weeks have been a big dig at my house. So, it's been great. Things are working again and happily so. That's been great. And this morning, my apologies for being late. I got waylaid by oyster mushrooms. I went off for a walk in the woods on my way here and had to forage dinner when it presented itself so beautifully. So for those of you who are foragers out there, you know that this time of year offers a plethora of choices in the forest around Vashon. So beautiful oyster mushrooms that daughter-in-love and I are going to, I have a daughter-in-love and a daughter-in-law, and feel so lucky. I have four wonderful kids here on the island. And we're going to make pizza tonight with oyster mushrooms on top. So.
Yeah.
Sounds wonderful.
Just one more thing that the rain brings to us here.
Right. That's right. Exactly. You know, I was laughing. I just overheard Truman telling the story that you didn't even notice it was raining, and that's how you knew you were a Northwestern.
Exactly.
A week and a half or two ago, I was invited to go to this writers' festival, authors' festival in Laconer. And, you know, a group of Northwest authors were gathering outside in this little square outside of the bookstore there. Any of you who know Laconer, there's a lovely little seaport bookstore. It's a charming little bookstore. And she'd invited a group of us. And I came in, 10 minutes early to set up, and didn't look like there was going to be anybody there. I mean, you know, and so I went, had a cup of tea, came back to check on things a half hour later, and it was filled. Not so many with people coming to see the authors or look at our books, but with all the Northwest authors. And I just laughed to myself. I thought, of course, these are Northwest authors. Every one of them showed up with their books and their tables and an umbrella. And we had our own little festival in the rain. So.
Of course.
Nice.
Didn't even occur to them not to come. So yeah. I love that.
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. The old neither rain or snow nor sleet at night or darker night will deter a Northwest author from showing up for reading. Right?
That's it.
That's right. I knew I was a Northwesterner when somebody who was getting in my car during a deluge asked me if I had any extra umbrellas. And I said something like, extra? No, I don't think so. But I have three jackets in here. I can loan you one.
Yeah, that's the truth. Which raincoat? Do I need a heavy raincoat or the light raincoat? I know. Only Northwesterners will
that's
have
right.
that.
Yeah, hats. The collection of hats.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, Gail, anything happening this week? You want to praise our listeners of?
Well, my head's been a little bit just focused on my own little neighborhood. Something that I think is interesting to many people on Vashon and around the area is that there's a continued effort to clean up the sound. And one of the ways they're doing that is, like all of my neighbors, I live in an old community on Sylvan Beach, myself and nearly all of the neighbors, as far as I know, all received a letter from King County saying that they wanted to come out and they wanted to test septic systems to make sure there was no leakage into the sound. And I really applaud that effort. Back in the day when many of these older homes were built, people didn't have a consciousness and there weren't as many people either. And so often what's called, gray water, which is your showers and your sinks and things like that, we're just allowed to run to the beach. And over the years, all of my neighbors and myself included have pulled that off and created, proper systems to, protect the sound. And so I'm kind of proud, actually. You know, King County wants to come look, and I'm like, yeah, come on down. We're good. So I think it makes a difference in the health of the Puget Sound or the Salish Sea all the way, all around, you know, not just in our neighborhood, but it's important that everybody do their part.
It is. And that's a great segue. Thank you, Gail. I'm Bruce Holman. I'm hosting today. And tomorrow is the United Nations World Ocean Day. And for us, a time to reflect on the and focus on the Salish Sea, our part of the world ocean. But it's also the day, and this is appropriate to what Gail was talking about, it's also the day that we kick off the Year of the Salish Sea. This is a youth-led initiative to bring together existing coastal and ocean stewardship programs and work through public engagement. And you can learn more about it at Year of the Salish Sea, all one word, .ca for Canada. So yearofthesalishsea.ca is a website where you can link into what's happening, going to be happening all over the Salish Sea. It begins tomorrow, June 8th, 2022, and it runs to June 7th, 2023. So very appropriate, Gail. Thank you for that entree there.
You know, once I still have it sitting out where I can see it regularly, is a map of the Salish Sea. A lot of people don't actually understand just what it is, and it is basically a watershed, and it runs about halfway up Vancouver, the inside of Vancouver Island and British Columbia there, and then runs down through the San Juans, Canadian and American San Juan Islands, and of course on our end, the south to the south, what has traditionally been known as Puget Sound, but officially changed by the governor to the Salish Sea, or by the state to the Salish Sea. So it's quite a large area, but it is defined by water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was an interesting process for both the United States and Canada, British Columbia, Washington State. And all the geographic naming sort of agencies that all get together and come up with this joint name for what was formerly known as, and still known as, the Straits of Georgia, and still known as Admiralty Inlet, and still known as Puget Sound, but to cap it with a sort of umbrella term of the Salish Sea, which refers to the Coast Salish language of the indigenous people of this region. And so that's why we call it the Salish Sea. And as Gail pointed out, it is a watershed. It basically includes all the rivers and all the territory that those rivers drain from that end up in the Salish Sea. So from the sort of south end of the Strait of Johnstone Strait up in at the north end of Vancouver Island, all the way down to Olympia is essentially the Salish Sea. Yeah, Lynn.
Hey, I was just going to ask a question of you two about your punny choice of the term umbrella term. Well done. Well played with that. But I also wanted to ask, does this mean that we're not going to be using the term Puget Sound anymore? Is that going to disappear, or is this one of the subsections that's going to be under the Salish Sea?
Right. Subsection. And technically, most people don't know this, but technically, Puget Sound only begins at the Tacoma Narrows.
Yeah.
Everything north of the Tacoma Narrows is Admiralty Inlet.
Ah.
And then you have the Straits of Juan de Fuca, and then everything north of the Straits of Juan de Fuca is known as the Gulf of Georgia. So those are the technical kinds of terms. And lots of inlets and bays and all that.
Commencement
kind of
Bay and Elliott Bay. And
God, like, I was always too drunk out on the boats to learn all of this.
Yeah, Gail.
I learned these terms back when I was a young 20-something leading canoe, back when people were canoeing, leading canoe adventures for teenagers up in, we would let them know that if they didn't paddle hard enough, they were going to be washed out either to the Straits of Juan de Fuca or the Straits of Georgia.
Yeah.
It was quite motivating. Oh, it's quite motivating at times. But I do want to say what I like about the term Salish Sea is that it, unfortunately, all the other terms are mostly kind of what you'd consider colonial, you know, the terms of colonialism, of someone who's come in, named places that aren't theirs, and then, you know, put their stamp of mine on it. And so I love to use the Salish Sea, and I liked thinking of it as one body of water, because it really is, you know, and So anyway, that's my two cents on that thought.
Definitely. And Kevin, you've sailed much of the Salish Sea from the Broughtons up at Johnstone Strait down to Olympia. What's your observation of how it's similar and how it's different?
Well, you know, I'm just really impressed with the different naming and different areas and regions. We were just actually on Anderson Island, anchored out for a couple of days, which is south, just the third island south of the Narrows. You know, it's just intriguing to me that what we call Puget Sound is just outside our door here on Vashon, very easily accessible. And as you move further north, you cross challenges. A sailor friend of mine who had an ambition to sail single-handedly up to Haida Gwaii, which is in north of Vancouver Island by quite a bit, I suggested I would help him take his boat from Port Townsend to Vancouver, British Columbia one time, thinking that would be a nice little day sail. And he looked at me like my experience was not nearly his, where he's had to turn around more than once because of this gale says the currents and the winds can be pretty treacherous out there. But yes, I've had the opportunity to go as far north as nearly the very north end of Vancouver Island. And as you go further north, you find different things to address as a boater. You find rapids, basically, after you cross the Strait of Georgia north of Nanaimo, which is no small task at all. That's the big water in the Salish Sea. Along with the Straits of Juan de Fuca, then you end up in the Narrows, all the different rapids that thread their way through the islands north of Nanaimo, which is just fascinating territory for boaters. So lots of different flavors and different aspects as you travel around the Salish Sea.
I can tell you, by the way, I'm trying to remember the name of the strait now, but it's up north of the Straits of Georgia. There's a huge island up there, and there's a strait that runs between the Vancouver Island and this other island. And that is the site of one of the largest non-nuclear explosions ever. And what happened is they blew up a huge rock there that was a hazard to navigation. Like, I think it was back in the 40s, but...
That's Hecate Strait.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm.
Between what was sometimes called the Queen Charlotte Islands, but... Correct. Technically, Haida Gwaii, which are a set of islands off the coast of British Columbia. So Hecate Strait is that sort of strait between Haida Gwaii and the Vancouver, I mean British Columbia mainland, and it's pretty wild water up there too, as well. So, so Salish Sea, year of the Salish Sea, time to get out and appreciate and celebrate this water that surrounds us here on Vashon Island. June 7th is also, hold on for this, do I get a drum roll?
Yes.
Today is National Chocolate Ice Cream Day.
Oh, my God.
Well, I contribute to that.
Does anybody here not like chocolate ice cream?
Sorry, I'm not a huge fan.
Oh, all right.
A decliner.
For
those who are, when was the last time you supported chocolate ice cream? Last night for me.
I was just thinking, too bad Zoomies is closed today.
Yeah.
They've got that soft serve. I love chocolate ice cream, soft serve.
Okay, we'll have to ask Truman, then what is your flavor of choice?
Well, it's a toss-up between vanilla and strawberry, actually. So, you know, what can I say? I'm just one of those kind of vanilla toast kind of guy.
Boring.
All right.
Well, there's very, very nice nuances to vanilla. You know, there's some that it's very, very good and some that's less so. So it's a much more nuanced.
So do you like the prominent bean?
The prominent
bean? Yes. All you have to do is walk into any of the grocery stores on the island and look at the ice cream case.
That's right.
And there is vanilla ice cream and French vanilla and creamy
vanilla beans.
Goes on and on and on. So,
yeah, I do like praline, though, too. So there you go. Because I am from West Texas, you know, come on.
Right. Well, in childhood memories, remember Napoleon ice cream, which was my grandmother would
Neapolitan.
Get it.
Neapolitan.
That's exactly. what it was. Yeah. Neapolitan, God, not Napoleon.
That would never have flown in the Irish South.
That's for
no.
sure.
Well, I'm realizing that is right out from being a kid and not reading. I'm like, that's as close as you got to, must be that. Anyway, she would slice it. She'd make slices of it and you'd get a little bit of each, you know. Yeah. So.
That's right.
Yes, ice cream. So go out and have a couple scoops of chocolate ice cream at the new ice cream store on Vashon if you get a chance. So today is also the day in 1769 that Daniel Boone began exploring the mountains of what would become the state of Kentucky, what we call the Trans-Appalachian West or west of the Appalachian Mountains. And this began what historian Patricia Limerick called the Daniel Boone paradox. And I want you to think about this, and we'll have a small discussion about this. So by opening up the Trans-Appalachian West to find new lands to basically escape encroaching civilization, Daniel Boone liked to live out in the wilderness, what he saw as wilderness. Of course, there were native people there, and it was settled in a way that he didn't really see at the time. But as he moved further west each time, what he did is he laid out trails and opened ways for people to follow him. And so the Daniel Boone paradox is by moving to the west, he opened the way for more people to follow him. So to create the very situation he was trying to escape. And that's the paradox of it. So I'm asking you, as the Brown Briefleys, is there a Vashon paradox? We all moved here to create the kind of island we are losing as more people move here to find what we found. So are we trapped in our own Vashon paradox? What do the Briefleys think?
You know, I think that is true to an extent, Bruce. But at the same time, you know, with the way we've done our land use regulations, there are a lot of areas where, you know, the 10-acre parcels are the minimum. And so that kind of puts a stop to some of that. And if you fly over the island, you'll be amazed at how little is actually it has homes on it. I mean, there's a lot of forest on the island if you fly over it. I'm impressed every time I go over it. But then I drive up and down the main highway and I think, my gosh, where did all these people come from?
Yeah. And that's, and let me just interject and then we'll get to you, Lynn. When you say we, Norman, it's not us that have done it. It's basically the state of Washington and King County who have interest in keeping rural areas close to, particularly in King County. And so being unincorporated King County, we don't get to make decisions for ourselves. The county council does and the state of Washington does or the federal government does. And so what has been imposed on Vashon, and thankfully, in my estimation, is that we are basically way underdeveloped compared to areas around us because of those kind of regulations and codes and sensitive area ordinances and State Growth Management Act and Shoreline Protection Acts and those kind of things. So it's really created a little haven here on Vashon Island that's surrounded by this ever-spreading pugetopolis of sort of urban development. So, Lynn, I jumped in there.
Well, Lynn? I was going to say, because of our bridge and our aquifer, you know, we do have that little same bubble, and that has led to my own personal theory about the Vashon paradox, which is that I kind of believe that we're all dead, that this is heaven. And that we've all had something to challenge us that on the way towards looking for a new house, something happened, we died, and our spirits have all ended up here. Because look at how long we get to know each other here. No one leaves. Have you ever noticed that?
It's kind of Brigadoon. Is that what you're telling us?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
That's my own paradox theory.
Well, I do. I've said this before, but I have a friend from Spain, a Spanish gentleman who came to visit here several years ago, and it was a time when I was a park commissioner, and I took him around. I've told this before, but took him around the island, showing him all the parks. And finally, one day, he said, "Truman, why do you have parks?" And I said, "Well, you know, it's public space," and I tried to explain why we have, you know, it's available to all of the public. And again, he said, but Truman, why do you have parks? And I thought, well, what is this guy not getting? And, you know, about the third time he asked, I said, well, why do you ask? He said, Truman, you live in a park. This is like, oh, okay, I got it now.
Well, my understanding, and Bruce, maybe you can add a little history to this, is my understanding that it was in the 1970s that there was a decision made with regard to the limited water that we have out here, and that's what began to keep it, the growth from developing on Vashon. That was actually a decision related to the single aquifer and limited water. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, sure. There was a report known as the Carr Report, C-A-R-R. A water specialist came out and did some work on Vashon, trying to identify the water sources on Vashon. I mean, a lot of old timers really believe that the water from Vashon came from the Olympic and Cascade Mountains and sort of came under 600 feet deep, you know, Puget Sound, and would bubble up in artesian springs that are scattered around the island. And what the Carr Report did is basically define Vashon as a single aquifer. Of course, you know, there are other aquifers much, much deeper, but you have to go thousands of feet deep to hit those other aquifers. Lots of people on Vashon have dry wells at 300, 400, 500, 600 feet. So it's the Carr Report really sort of identified Vashon as a single source aquifer. And that began to shape sort of governmental policy decisions, planning decisions, those kinds of things, and began to affect how people saw water resources on the island. And that's the point at which you began to get the development of the Vashon Groundwater Committee, which is a still functioning sort of functions at various levels of efficacy at different times. But basically, the Vashon Groundwater Committee keeps track of groundwater on Vashon. Yeah, Kevin.
And just as there's so many intersections, if you will, with water and life on Vashon, I also arrived when the groundwater management issues were at a peak of interest. And subsequent to that, of course, many people now have Airbnbs. And so while our housing stock and our number of families hasn't necessarily gone up, our use of that aquifer has, just because of the number of visitors we're
exactly
now seeing.
Exactly right.
Yeah, the other thing that's now discussing in the council, the community council, is around homelessness and housing availability and whether we can expand the housing and whether the water rights will restrict that. And when that topic comes up, there are amazing experts who come to the fore and talk about, it's not just about, you know, can you get water today? It's about whether you have saltwater intrusion in the coastal wells. It's whether the amount of nitrogen will flood into the aquifer from, you know, animal waste and other things, and from all of the septic tanks we have. And therefore, you might have water, but it may be polluted. And so it's not a trivial issue by any stretch of the imagination. And I think the fear that, at least that I have, is that I don't know how the aquifer ever gets cleaned up once it gets polluted. And so when you entertain casual conversations about whether we can expand our number of people on Vashon, we need to realize that may be a resource that's not recoverable if it ever gets spoiled. So things to definitely think about, but certainly an issue of high criticality by living here on Vashon.
Sure. And if I can follow up on that, just one of the plans for the high-level bridge in the early 1950s, they were going to build a bridge very much like the Comanera Bridge from South Worth to the north end of Vashon. And part of that plan was to have a water main coming across that bridge, with the water being supplied from the Olympic Mountains. And the plans for those bridges, but that was a high level bridge. And then there was going to be a floating bridge from the north end of Vashon over to Fauntleroy, basically, Brace Point, just south of Fauntleroy. And those bridge plans had projections for 50,000 people on Vashon Island. So water and a water main coming across the high level bridge would have changed Vashon dramatically. Yeah, Lynn, sorry to jump in.
No, that's okay. I appreciate knowing that because it fits into what I was going to say. Kevin, when you were talking about the, you know, what will happen if our aquifer gets polluted, I remember that being the major argument that Vashon used to fight the Glacier Mining Company, who wanted to use gravel from our kind of open pit to take it across the Salish Sea there to become Seattle's third runway. Mm-hmm. And we argued it not only because of the damage to the, you know, the flora and the fauna in the sound, but because they would be getting awfully close to the water table level on Vashon, beneath which you don't want to go. You want to not disturb that water level and the barriers between the aquifer and the groundwater.
Yeah, because that gravel is the filtration system which provides for clean water. Yeah, so taking it away is risky.
Exactly.
Yeah, and when you look at the groundwater maps, you know, Vashon and Maury have very different levels of groundwater and very, very different aquifers under because of the nature of the two islands. And, you know, and even though Quartermaster Harbor is only about 30, 40 feet deep in its deepest, in inner harbor anyway, and probably less than 100 feet in the outer harbor, as you go down 200-300 feet, those aquifers begin to interconnect between Vashon and Maury Island. So, yeah, very significant. Yeah, Kevin?
You know, one time, so I'm on a well, and it's Scott Water Association. There's nine families, and I have a role, of responsibility in managing that system. I'll just say that. And at one time, I did a calculation. How much water use do we have in the association annually? And how much rainfall is needed to replace that? And the good news is that we got plenty of rain here now, right? There's like no shortage of rain today. However, you know, we look at the national weather maps and we see that gigantic heat dome and the multi-year drought, Truman, that you talked about in Texas. Yeah. Those are things that we're not guaranteed to be protected from. And so the idea that today we have enough rain to recharge our aquifer, that may not always be true. Again, so lots of things to consider. It's not all just you know, just a few items to take into consideration.
It's also go ahead, Bruce. Oh, it's also interesting. I mean, where you are, Kevin, and as you move to the northwest side of the island, the rainfall is almost triple what it is at the east side of and southeast side of Maury Island. So there's very different rainfall on the island, which is also a lot of people don't recognize. And that's why when you go to Gold Beach, it seems like you're in Southern California.
Yeah.
And when you go where Gail lives up at Sylvan Beach, it feels like you're in British Columbia.
it's a real rainforest up there, I can guarantee.
It really is.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful. I was walking this morning and noticing that the ferns were literally over our heads tall with the as we were walking along, and I'm, you know, a little over 5 foot tall, 5'3", and they were up over the top.
I have just a quick question. It may be longer than a 2 minute question, but we can come back to it. I don't know if aquifer water can be tapped and stored somewhere. You know, we're into renewable energy now, and we're putting solar panels everywhere. There's more money going into solar, and it makes me wonder what is happening now with the water that we have, with the idea about taking dams down now that we use for hydropower because of the fish and all of that that we're trying to save. It's a very interconnected ecosystem, so we have a lot to learn as we go forward.
Well, in both in Australia and much of the Middle East, they're investing heavily in desalinization plants. I mean, there's sort of almost an endless supply in the Salish Sea, but it's very expensive right now to change it from salt water into fresh water. But Melbourne, City of Melbourne invested, you know, they were in a 12-year drought, and they invested heavily in a massive desalinization plant, enough to supply about a third of the water needs of a city of almost 6 million people. Wow. So, wow. So there are options, but they're not always, you know, desirable options.
And somebody this week was in the news for an underwater turbine. I don't know the details of that, but I might look into it. We can talk about that more later.
Yep. Well, we're drawing to our close here. So let me just suggest that maybe next week we can come back. This is a powerful week going on. Beginning on Thursday, there's going to be congressional hearings on the January 6th insurrection. We've had 246 mass shootings this year, 13 mass shootings this past weekend. The U.S. Senate is close to voting on some kind of gun control, hopefully. And so we have a lot to talk about beyond Vashon, and it's been very refreshing to me to be able to spend this day with the Briefleys and with our audience, catching up on Vashon-centric matters. So for Gail, Lynn, Kevin, Truman, I'm Bruce Hallman. Hopefully we'll see you guys all next week when Gail Kellner will be the host of the next edition of Brown Briefly.